Senator DeCrife, Racing Commission and State Lottery, continuing operations under government shutdown. Let the record show we do have a quorum. Welcome, Senator DeCrife.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I do have an A2 amendment that I'd like to have handed out.
Not in our packet.
It's coming around, members. Senator Daley moves the A2 amendment. Would you like to explain the amendment, Senator Craig?
Well, in a nutshell, Mr. Chair, it's a delete everything amendment. In section one, it basically talks about the disposition of proceeds to the account. Section 2, reimbursement account credit. Section 3 goes over the appropriation for functions supporting the ongoing operations of the Racing Commission. Section 4 goes over reimbursement to commission. Section 5, powers and duties. Section 6, appropriations for functions supporting the ongoing operation of the Gambling Control Board. Section 7, the ongoing operations, which basically directs the Minnesota Lottery. And Section 8, appropriations for functions supporting the ongoing operations of the State Lottery.
On the author's amendment, the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Any further discussion, Senator DeCrife?
To the amendment, no, but...
bill
or to the bill. For this Senate file, it basically is allowing operations on an ongoing basis for the Racing Commission and the State Lottery. The state shutdown in the summer of 2011 was devastating to the racing industry in Minnesota. The industry pays 100% of the regulatory costs related to the Minnesota Racing Commission and generates revenue to the state when they are operating, so shutting the racing industry down during a state government shutdown is unnecessary. The money to regulate horse racing was in the bank during the shutdown, and it made no sense that the Minnesota Racing Commission was unable to access these funds. Canterbury Park and Running Aces are private businesses that suffer significant harm, financial harm, some of which are unique in their industry when their industry is caused to shut down. Number one, for them to conduct a race meet, they need to be able to recruit horsemen from around the country to ship their horses to Minnesota for the summer. These recruited horsemen incur significant expenses in moving and need to be certain that they have the opportunity to race. Winning purse money is the only way they derive income. This group that travels to Minnesota have many other options of racing, of places to race during the summer, and won't come here if there's uncertainty. I'm aware of only one other time in the 150-year history of racing that racing was shut down to a government shutdown of regulators, and that was New Jersey in 2005 when the tracks and casinos were shut down for just a few days. If another shutdown were to be experienced like the one in 2011, it would cause irreversible harm to the racing industry in Minnesota, which includes many small businesses that support it. The state government shutdown executive summary created by Minnesota Management and Budget lists the lottery revenue loss at $9.98 million. I'd just like to mention a couple of things from a memo that I see from Tom Barrett, Executive Director of Minnesota Gambling Control Board. He says that 100% of the funding for Gambling Control Board comes from dedicated revenue from the charitable gaming industry we regulate. Regulatory fees amount to 0.1% of the industry's gross receipts. Okay. The Gambling Control Board receives no general fund monies. The board is independent on receiving an appropriation of the dedicated funds from the legislature for its operating budget. There was no provision to separate out the dedicated fund agencies from the general fund agencies during the biennial budget process, and as a result, the Gambling Control Board and Racing Commission and Lottery was included in the appropriation bill with the other state agencies. And the intent of this bill, he goes on to say, it is my expectation that this bill is proposed exactly what it is intended to do, allow dedicated funded agencies to continue with their operation in the event of another state shutdown due to failure to pass a general fund appropriation bill. And I would just like to read a couple of sentences from the Minnesota Racing Commission annual report from 2011. The state shutdown caused the cessation of all live racing simulcast from July 1st to July 20th, cancellation of 12 racing days, including historically successful 4th of July weekend racing, and loss of nearly 500 hours of card club operations at Canterbury Park and Running Aces Harness Park. In addition, all thoroughbred, quarter horse, and standardbred horsemen, owners, trainers, jockeys, and drivers, grooms and hot walkers, veterinarians, farriers, and others suffered loss of earnings and opportunities that had negative impact, economic impact amongst their vendors and suppliers and others in their respective communities. What I would ask of this committee is to pass this bill forward. I believe that this is very important that we do not allow this to happen again. There's absolutely no sense in shutting down the lottery or the racing commission, and we should allow these businesses to survive and thrive. I just don't think it makes any sense to potentially devastate an entire industry when there's no reason for it at all.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator DeKreif, there was a shutdown in 2005 under a prior administration. Was the Racing Commission impacted during that one, or how did it work then?
Senator DeKreif.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, I might ask somebody from the board to come up and...
While he's doing that, I guess I also want to hear again how much lost revenue there was.
Please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Senator, the 2005 did not affect the Racing Commission that year because we were in the State Department's bill, and that bill did pass.
Senator DeKreif, you want to answer the second question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka. The state government shutdown executive summary created by MMB lists a lottery revenue loss at $9.98 million.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 1975. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Griffin, I understand what you're trying to accomplish. But my concern is a couple of things. First, when things were reversed and we looked at a possible shutdown in 2005 and possibly in response to Senator Gazelka, 2005, and Senator Gazelka, I'm not sure when you were in the House. It was at that time. Okay. So obviously what you recall is most of the bills had passed. The environment bill had not passed by July 1st. There were parts of human services and so on. But obviously last year was quite unique. But what we were told, and I had some sympathy to the position, and as I thought about this over the several years, I think more of a correct position, is when we attempted, when roles were reversed, and we looked at some of the same of trying to do this lights-on kind of approach, the response we had from the then-minority in the Senate was, well, that's just government on autopilot. You know, then we're not making any real decisions. And at the time I thought about it and felt there was some merit to the argument, I think watching what happened last year, there was even more merit to that argument that was used by the Republican minority against us in 2005. Second, understand what you're talking about in terms of the racing industry, that there's money coming into the state. You've talked about the lack of the fact that this is a non-general fund revenue source. But that being the case, are we not better off in terms of trying to do everything in a single package so we can kind of see the totality? I mean, how do we distinguish the Minnesota Zoo from the Racing Commission. That's non-general fund revenue. That's revenue being brought into the state for purposes of operation of the zoo. We certainly could take a look at fishing licenses. That's dedicated revenue through the DNR. That's not general fund revenue. That obviously has an impact on a huge industry in Minnesota. Lakes and fishing throughout the state, in almost every corner of the state. And so obviously the loss of the fishing license revenue makes a significant difference to the economy of Minnesota. So I have a little bit of concern about, again, not to minimize what the racing industry has done for Minnesota, but when we start cherry-picking, in effect, with where we were last year, that's why I wonder if we're better off trying to take a look at the totality of where we are, although that doesn't answer the first concern about whether or not we're putting government on autopilot. Last comment I'd make, Mr. Chairman, is, again, I'm not unsympathetic to the folks who were impacted, but obviously we also impacted a lot of state workers who also spend money in Minnesota, and not just in terms of the maintenance of you know, their mortgages, rents, whatever, but are spending money that goes elsewhere in the state. So the impact in terms of what happened was significant, but I am concerned in the particular with this bill about whether or not we look at the prism of a particular industry and we're not looking at the totality of what else we're doing. Now, I know there are other bills floating around, or not floating around, but other bills have been introduced. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if there are going to be a series of bills like this. That being the case, I don't know if we might have been better off having all the bills at once. I don't know how many bills are in this committee versus another committee, but just a couple thoughts relative to that.
Thank you. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can just make a comment, I did serve in the House in 05 when that shutdown occurred, and what I found is similar situations with different approaches of administrations. And, you know, there was many things that we could have passed this year that there was general agreement that clearly would have not impacted so many people in so many sectors. And so I do have a Freedom to Hunt and Fish Act. I mean, there's other ones out there that we should say, you know, the dollars are there. If they're available, Senator DeKreif is bringing something forward that should be going forward. It's already there. And to punish self-employed people, the people that enjoy those things, whether it's racetracks or fishing licenses, fishing boats, you name it, is a big, big mistake. And so, Senator DeKreif, I'm glad you're bringing this forward, and I hope to vote for it on the Senate floor.
Further discussion? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that Senate file 1975 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Lilly moves that Senate file 1975 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Senator Carlson.
I'd request a roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary will take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Cohen.
No.
Senator Daley.
Aye.
Senator Hayden?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Aye.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Aye.
Senator Uyghur?
No.
Senator Perry?
Aye. 5-4, 5 ayes and 4 noes. The motion does prevail, and Senate file 1975 will be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Thank you, Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
We'll move on to the second item on the agenda, which is Senate File 1544. Again, Senator DeKreif, County, Cities, Towns, Land Conveyance to Congressionally Chartered Veteran Service Organizations for Less Than Market Value Authorization. Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. This is a bill that was heard here last week, and then Senator Olson had suggested an amendment. And so I'd like to introduce an A3 amendment.
Senator Daley moves the A3 amendment. On the amendment, Senator DeKreif.
Essentially, in the original bill, I had a sentence in there that essentially says that the organization would not be allowed to sell you know, any of this property that was conveyed to them for 5 years. And the amendment changes that essentially to say that any property conveyed under the subdivision is subject to the following conditions. Number one, that the Veterans Service Organization agrees to notify the convening entity of the property ceases to be used for a public purpose, or if the organization wishes to sell or otherwise convey the property. And number two, the organization agrees to convey the property to the convening entity upon request of the convening entity. So essentially, the property, if the city in this case would want it back, the veterans organization would have to give it back to the city rather than be able to sell it.
All right. Discussion on the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails to the bill as amendment, Senator DeCrae.
Well, as was testified to last week, essentially what this bill does, it allows a city to, with something less than market value, it would allow them to give some land to a government entity, or to a, I want to make sure I have the terminology correct here, congressionally chartered veteran service organization. And the organizations are something similar to, but not limited to, the American Legion, AMVETS, and the VFWs. Quite often this land would be used for something like a memorial and or a memorial park. And what we want to do is we want to give these cities and organizations an opportunity to work together in a way where it doesn't have to cost them a lot of money.
All right. Further discussion on Senate File 1544. Senator Gazelka?
Well, I'll move Senate File 1444 as amended, be recommended pass.
Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 1544 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator DeCrife.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Third item on the agenda is Senate File 1643, Senator Carlson, Income Tax Credit for Past Military Service Eligibility Modification. Welcome, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Senator John Carlson, Senate District 4.
And you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1643 is a pretty simple bill. What it does is extends the $750 tax credit that we currently have on our books for retired and active military personnel. It extends that to a different category of retired employee and retired military personnel. And it bases it basically in our current statutes. If you have 20 years of service or more, retired military, you have the availability of the $750 credit. But there are some exceptions under United States Title 10 that where there's retired military personnel that don't have 20 years of service. It doesn't affect very many folks, but it does affect some. And so this is just extending that to all retired military personnel. And with me, we do have a testifier, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and proceed.
Yes, sir. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. I'm also a disabled Vietnam combat veteran. And this particular bill encompasses service-disabled people with 100% disability or more. Well, you can't have more than 100%. And that entitles them to a $750 tax deduction, a tax credit in the Minnesota State Tax Code. I think this is a great thing because not all these young men and women coming back are 20-year people, and they're 100% or they've given blood like me to service of their country, and it's an equitable thing to do that, to give them that extra $750 tax deduction for the service to their country. Thank you for the
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Senator Goodwin.
Just a couple questions, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson. Does this also apply to the spouses of veterans that have died from natural causes or died in the service, or does it just the veterans that are 100% disabled?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Goodwin, for the question. This does not. This only applies to those disabled and retired military.
Just one other
Senator
quick question.
Senator Goodwin.
How did you arrive at the $750 credit?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Goodwin, that is already on our books. If you look under Minnesota Statute 290.0677, this credit already exists. All we're doing is expanding slightly who is available, who is eligible for that credit.
Senator Goodwin. Oh, done. Okay. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Carlson, are you planning to send this bill to the Tax Committee for the revenue impact?
Yes, that's where it's going.
Just checking.
All right.
Suspicious.
All right. Any further discussion? Senator Carlson.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Ortman's point, I move that Senate File 1643 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
To Senator Carlson's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Carlson. We'll move on to the fourth item on the agenda, Senate File 1856, Senator Carlson, Lawful Gambling License Organizations Authority to Contribute Net Profits to 501c19 Organizations. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, I'm Senator John Carlson from Senate District 4. With me today is Ms. Ten Lee Lund from Longview, who brought this. One of the great things about being an elected representative, whether I guess you're in the House or the Senate, for us in the Senate, is a lot of times we get calls from constituents, and they have a question about something that's in law that's either allows them to do something or doesn't allow them to do something. And as elected folks, we have a lot more availability to sort of get things moving and get things done. This particular bill was brought out when Ms. Lund called me up. She's a constituent from Longville. And so she said, you know, we really would love to be able to donate money from our charitable gambling at the Chamber of Commerce to our veterans, to the VFW Club. And she said, we really can't do that as effectively as we would like to. And so I think at this point, before I explain the bill any further, I'll just have Ms. Lund kind of tell us the story.
Please state your name and you may proceed.
I am Ten Lee Lund. I'm the activity director for the Longville Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce. Our chamber holds the city's or the area's charitable gambling license. We're a very small town, and as such, we all work together, and the partnerships we forge are really crucial to the vitality of our community. The Longville VFW Post 772 and the Ladies Auxiliary have become major partners for the chamber, volunteering for many of our activities throughout the year. They also coordinate other community activities and serve the needs of military veterans locally and regionally. Yet their only source of income is from poppy sales, which are held 2 days over Memorial Day weekend. So when they requested funds from the chamber's charitable gambling account to help support their community efforts, we definitely wanted to comply. However, our contribution was not allowed under the lawful purpose expenditures because VFW Post 772 is organized as a 501c19 organization. As I read it and as our compliance officer clarified it, any group organized as a 501c3 or c4 could receive direct contributions to its general fund to fund its primary purpose. But as a 501c19, our VFW had to submit detailed invoices and could only be compensated for very specific allowable expenses. I didn't think that was fair. In order to even be a member of the VFW, these men and women have to prove they served our country in foreign conflicts. So I requested that the lawful purpose regulations be amended to treat 501c19 organizations just the same as 501c3 and c4, allowing charitable gambling funds to be contributed to fund their primary purpose.
All right.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
So the first thing I was able to do is get a hold of Mr. Barrett and discuss the situation with him. We had a couple of different go-arounds with the language in the bill. First, he thought that they could do that, but then when we explained that, no, it had to be for a specific purpose and turn in an invoice for a flag or whatever, the process was onerous. So in working with Mr. Barrett, what we came up with is to treat the 50C-19s just as if they were a 50C-3, with the exception of if that 50C-19 did have a charitable gambling license, then that would be excluded. So in other words, we didn't want this rolling back and forth between two charitable gambling license situations, so that eliminated that need or that potential problem. And so I know Mr. Barrett was not going to be able to be here today. I know that he's in favor of this bill, is in fine with the bill, and I guess we would stand for questions.
Any discussion? Senator Gazelka.
Sounds awesome, Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson. Is there anybody that is in opposition to this bill at all?
Senator Carlson?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, we have heard no opposition to this bill.
Further discussion? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, why can't the Veterans Organization become a charitable gaming organization and earn their...
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Goodwin, that's a good question. I think I probably will let Ms. Lund speak to this also, but when you have a very small community, I know you're from a larger area where there's probably multiple licenses. In a small area like this, if you start dividing up and have more than one charitable gambling establishment, it really sort of dilutes and nobody makes any money. I don't know if
Ms. Lund.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Longville has a population of, I think, 156 in the most recent census, and our post doesn't even have a building. They don't have a post home. They don't have a barn restaurant. They don't have any source of income other than the poppy sales, literally.
Okay, so thank you.
That's why.
Any further discussion? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1856 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right, members, the fifth item on today's agenda is Senate File 1642, Senator Perry's Minnesota National Guard Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program Civil Immunity. Senator Perry, as you're getting settled in there, I believe you do have an author's amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
All right, the A1 amendment, Senator Perry moves that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Senator Perry, could you talk to us a little bit about the A1 amendment?
What this does is really bring our language together with the language that was moved through the House to help clear the language up. And so it puts them both together on that. So pretty much what the amendment does are just a few little tweakings in here. I can talk to the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
This bill provides immunity for damages for persons who provide or receive certain services in
Mr.
Minnesota.
Chairman, are we working off the amendment or the bill? Yeah,
amendment we adopted.
Okay. We're off the bill as amended, Senator, or excuse me, Mr. Chair. You should have copies, okay. I believe.
So this is the A1 amendment?
Yeah.
Correct.
It is the A1 amendment.
What's that? Yeah, we did.
Okay. All members have a copy?
Mr. Chair, it was a delete all, so we'll be working off this.
Please proceed.
All right, thank you. I know we've all heard about the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. This is a bill that will provide immunity, and I think, as we go through this, we need to know that a person who provides certain services to an active or reserve service member or to an immediate family member of the service member before, during, or after mobilization or deployment for a contingency operations ordered by proper military authority is not liable for damages caused as a result of the provisions of the services. Now, a recipient of services under the program is not eligible or is not liable for damages incurred by a person who provides the services under the program. And the services include any voluntary assistance provided through the program related to the service members or the service members' families, home maintenance, transportation, physical or emotional health, personal finance, or other similar matters. Now, the one thing that this bill does not grant immunity for willful and wanton or reckless acts or omissions by the provider of services or the recipient of services. And I do have a testifier here today that I would like to have testify, Mr. Chair.
If you could announce your name for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you. My name is Judy Seeberger. I'm the Vice President of the Yellow Ribbon Network of Washington County.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Please proceed.
Thank you. Bill was requested by the Washington County Yellow Ribbon Network over concerns of liability that might occur when a volunteer is providing services to a service member's family or a veteran. The Yellow Ribbon Network is something that was sort of the it was pushed through by the Minnesota National Guard, but it's not limited to members of the Guard or their families. It's applicable to any branch of the service. The idea was, since we don't have an active military base in the state to provide ongoing support to families of deployed personnel, why can't we as members of the community do the same thing? And while the Minnesota National Guard sort of pushed it out there, the communities and counties and businesses took it and ran with it. So what we have now, Washington County is recognized as a Yellow Ribbon County. I'm also chair of a consortium of counties, including Bayport, West Lakeland Township, Oak Park Heights, and Baytown Township. We are a consortium. We are a group of communities that we are networked. If a need comes in, we have a system where we can disseminate that out, push that through our network, and that can get further pushed out as need be. It can get pushed up through the county and disseminated throughout the county networks, and the word gets out that, let's say, the spouse of a Coast Guard reservist who is deployed needs some help. And we have volunteers in our network that step forward and say, yeah, I can do that, or I can go grocery shopping for her, or I can, you know, fix her car, whatever it is. And to be honest with you, the support has been tremendous. My husband is in the Navy Reserve. He just got back from a year-long deployment, and I can tell you that I personally relied on the services as well. And when I put a need out there, as reluctant as I was as a military spouse, but when I did it, I had people lining up, and these were people that I knew. They were from my community, and they helped me out with whatever I needed, no questions asked. They were grateful to do it and went on their way. It was fantastic. So it's really a cool idea that's working really well. The idea is here, and Washington County approached Representative Detmer in the House about this, is that let's say somebody provides a service and something goes horribly wrong, and there's an injury or some property damage or something like that. How can we protect the networks? How can we protect the person volunteering the service? And that's what was underlying the idea for this bill. I can report to you that I've just come from the House Committee, the Civil Litigation Committee, and they're tweaking the language even more to address scenarios where that wouldn't leave a military family without recourse, the concerns we're having to do with insurance coverage and that kind of thing. An amendment was offered into the Senate, into the House, including as an exception under Subdivision 3, accepting application of the section to the extent the acts or omissions are covered by an insurance policy. So they're looking for address situations where insurance may apply, and accepting that out. The concern was also raised with regard to what if you have insurance, but or you're supposed to have insurance, but you don't have insurance. How are we then leaving the service member out in the cold then? And right now they're tweaking the language to write that person out of the bill as well. So if you're supposed to have insurance, but you don't have insurance, you don't get the benefit of immunity, basically. There was a verbal amendment offered for line 1-10, eliminating who, comma, while participating, and inserting language that in good faith participates. And the good faith language also was to try to address those who were acting maybe beyond their capabilities, weren't providing good faith services and that kind of thing. Also that the intent was that the service member's family would not be left without adequate protection, yet the networks and the persons volunteering their time would have an incentive to step forward and volunteer. I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Just so you know, as this bill moves forward, I don't know if I mentioned it, but its next stop is in judiciary.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Thank you, Ms. Seeberger, and thank you for your husband's service and your service.
Thank
it's
you.
Very much appreciated. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify?
Just you. Just me. So, Mr. Chairman?
Members, questions. Senator Olson.
Well, I was just trying to follow. I thought I heard the witness testify that that it had been amended to say it was if it was a good faith effort. I don't see that language
in house,
there. Is that
the House?
Oh, that's an amendment.
House.
I see. I didn't hear all of it. So the House is different.
Right. It started out. I just Seaberger. Came from there.
Okay.
Yeah. It started out exactly like this A1 amendment, and then they got going on it, and they're still not done, to be honest with you.
Is that how is that an improvement? Is it because on 1.15, providing the service unless the act or omission is willful or and wanton or reckless. So we've kind of dealt with the other side of it. Do you have to say good faith effort on the one hand and have this on the other, or how does that work?
Ms. Seeberger.
I can address what the concern was there, and that was, let's say the call goes out through a church that somebody needs some electrical wiring done, and somebody steps forward and says, I think I can wire that switch, when that person really has no business doing that. They don't have to be a certified electrician, but they really don't know what they're doing. The argument was that's not a good faith effort to come forward and help that person out. So the idea was it doesn't have to be as extreme as willful and wanton conduct, but it just has to be a competent person acting with the right motive at the right time to do the work. That was the concern.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, Ms. Seeberger or Senator Perry. I understand the L. Rubin program and what it's done, but let me ask then a couple of hypotheticals just to understand how it fits in with the bill we have in front of us, because maybe I could – you indicated you were listening to the House Committee debate. Was this in the House Judiciary Committee?
Civil Law
Seeberger.
Committee.
Seeberger.
Okay.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, obviously that committee, Senator Perry, is going to have a better handle on some of these liability issues than this committee. But just a couple of hypotheticals. Ms. Seeberger, let's take the situation you just mentioned. Somebody steps forth to provide help with electrical wiring. And let's say that is somebody who has, we think, competence to do it. And since I would have zero competence to do it, I want to be a little bit careful about what I'm asking. But let's say that person goes to the service member's home and does something in a negligent way, and the house burns down. So now that volunteer providing the service is excluded from any liability. Is that correct?
Ms. Seeberger?
The answer is it depends. One of the amendments that was pushed through just now in the Civil Committee in the House creates an exception that, that negligent act, this bill wouldn't apply to the extent that the acts or omissions are covered by an insurance policy issued to the person or entity for whom the person serves. So let's say that the guy came over and did the electrical wiring and this particular conduct was covered by his homeowner's policy. In that case, then there would be recourse and that policy would cover it. There wouldn't be immunity with the language as proposed just now in the House.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Senator Cohen, Mr. Chair, can I?
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen, I think also, if I'm hearing you right, would that not be covered, as I see it, would be covered under Subdivision 3 exemption, where this section does not apply to a person who provides services to an active or reservist service member or to an immediate family member of the service member during the course of the person's regular employment or for which the person receives compensation. So in my mind, when as I delve into that, but you're the attorney, that leads me to believe if I, as an electrician, volunteer my services.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, my hypothetical would assume the person was not necessarily a licensed electrician.
Oh, okay.
But I think Ms. Sieber answered the question possibly. Let me, Mr. Chairman, ask another hypothetical, which I think is more directly covered by the proposed House language. And, Senator Perry, I guess I would encourage you maybe in the Judiciary Committee.
Right.
I assume you don't want your committee turned into a Judiciary Committee, but mm-hmm. Maybe you do.
We have enough attorneys, Mr. Chair.
To maybe
Senator Cohen, not this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, Ms. Sieberger, an example I'm guessing that would be covered is the volunteer is going to purchase groceries for the service member's family. And maybe the service member's family has to stay at home with young kids, has a million things he or she is doing, and so the volunteer is going to help just do a number of errands, go to the grocery store, get groceries, whatever, in the process hits somebody and severely injures that third party who has nothing to do with the service member. I'm assuming your suggestion, what you're saying is that the House language would then contemplate that you could still pursue a negligence action, because it's not willful or wanton behavior. You could still pursue the negligence action against that volunteer because there's insurance coverage, we assume, for that volunteer's automobile. Is that
right?
Ms. Sieberger?
Thank you. Yes, that would be the case. Their own automobile or service member's automobile if they're using their car with permission.
Mr. Chair, if I can bring clarification to that.
Senator Gazelka.
Selling auto and home insurance, if there's a volunteer situation and they're not collecting money and it's a covered claim, cause a fire because of electrician problems or whatever, and it's a fire, the fire is going to be covered under that person's insurance. Or if somebody's driving a car and, they're doing something by your permission just to go out and help you and there's an accident, the liability from that car is going to extend for that accident. So, that part of it with insurance covers a whole lot of stuff there. So,
and Mr. Chairman, I would Senator disagree, Cohen. But that's not the language we have in front of us right now. And that's why, Senator Perry, if these are some changes, if maybe, I don't know if you want to offer some assurance to the committee, if you might take a look at the House amendments and consider asking those amendments to be presented in the Judiciary Committee, that might take care of some of these kinds of concerns.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're right, Senator Cohen, that's why we originally took the language, because they had a chance to vet it before we did, and it made sense. And so knowing what's happening right now, once we get to by the time we get to Judiciary, I'm sure we will have some amendments prepared and ready.
Senator Carlson, and then we're going to wrap this up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Perry for bringing this bill forward. I know we have a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Committee in Bemidji, and this will make it a lot easier to recruit those volunteers to step up and do that. So thank you. And Ms. Sieberger, thank you.
Mr. Chair? Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question. Are there any claims right now that have been filed on Yellow Ribbon?
Ms. Sieberger?
No, thankfully. Okay. And no mishaps either that I'm aware of.
Okay, good. I hope they can get fixed in Judiciary. And we have Yellow Ribbon and North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and I get email requests as a part of a network all the time. And like Senator Cohen, I would not ever venture to do electrical work. but on the insurance issue, even though your insurance policy might cover it, the insurance company then would go after the negligent person. So I think, you've got some work to do there, but the overall intent of not having a chilling impact on volunteers is important. So I thank you for coming forward.
Members, Senator Perry will continue to work on this as it moves to Judiciary. Senator Perry?
I move that Senate File 1642, as amended, be recommended to pass and pass to Judiciary and Public Safety.
All those in favor of this motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Perry. We'll move on to the last item. The sixth item on the agenda is House File 1903. Senator Perry, the Veterans Affairs Honor Guard Selection Priority Authorization Removal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Under current law, the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs shall pay within reasonable available funds upon request by the local units of certain veteran organizations up to $50 to the local unit for providing honored guard detail at a funeral of one of our honored veterans. And under current law, the Commissioner is permitted to give priority to local units that do not have charitable gambling operations. And what we're attempting to do is just to take and strike, as you can see, I believe it's line 1.10, the Commissioner may give priority to local units that do not have charitable gambling operations. Gives the Commissioner, in my mind, with this more flexibility to use the available funds that are out there.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify, either in favor or against this? No? Seeing no one?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1903 be recommended to pass.
All those in favor of this motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes. Members, we will not be having our committee meeting on Wednesday, nor will we have it on Thursday, given certain scheduling challenges, so we'll next meet on Monday. There being no further business before this committee, the meeting is adjourned.